Duncan McLeod, and this is the Tech Central podcast brought to you today by the folks at Revix. I'm pleased to welcome Revix co-founder and CEO Sean Sanders back to the podcast now. Welcome, Sean. It's good to see you again.
Hey, Duncan. Yeah, it's good to see you too. How you been?
Been good. It's spring day, but in Johannesburg, it is bitterly cold today. So I think the weather gods got something wrong. How are things down in Cape Town?
Things are cold as well, but I think this booming crypto market is making up for it.
So warming things up. Yeah, for sure. Okay, we're going to talk about everything crypto today, and I'm particularly excited to get your views on what's been happening with the Bitcoin price. But first, for anyone who might have missed our first discussion, which I think was back in June, Sean, maybe just tell us a bit about Revix and what it is you guys do.
Sure. So Revix is an online investment platform, and we allow anyone to invest in a variety of different crypto products. And those crypto products include three crypto bundles. So our flagship product is our top 10 crypto bundle, which provides diversified exposure to the cryptocurrency market. So this is like the JSE top 40 of crypto. You get a diversified basket of cryptocurrencies, and that basket of cryptocurrencies that we call a bundle is rebalanced every single month. And then we've got two themed-based bundles. So just like in the stock market, you've got different sectors like the technology sector or the resources sector. In the crypto world, you have different sectors or themes really as well. So we've got a payments-focused theme, which is holds all the cryptocurrencies that are looking to digitize money and sort of revolutionize the way that value is transferred around the world. And then we've got a bundle called the smart contract bundle, and that provides exposure to the smart contract oriented cryptocurrencies like Ethereum, Ethereum Classic, Neo, Cardano, etc. Right. And then we offer a US dollar stablecoin called USDC, which is pegged to the US dollar. And then we offer Pax Gold, and that's what we spoke about in the previous podcast, which is a token that is backed by physical gold held in London Brings Vaults.
Right.
And that's been obviously a fantastic investment over this lockup and lockdown period.
Yeah.
With gold shooting up to, you know, record levels and all the rest.
Are you co-founded this business? Who's your co-founder, and when did you guys get this off the ground?
So Louis Bass is my co-founder, and we split ways about 9 months ago.
Okay.
The reason we split ways is that he was building another business when we were building Revix. He was doing a lot of our software consulting for the when we initially built the platform. And we actually wanted to build this business to democratize access to crypto. We thought the idea of speculating in this space, which is kind of what everyone does, well, not everyone, but the vast majority of the market, what they do, is a silly way to approach this asset class, because this is an asset class that is emerging. I mean, it's literally come from a few million dollars less than 8 years ago to being worth, what, $360 odd billion right now. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing a whole new way of being able to move value around the world, of being able to tokenize assets, being able to move assets from the physical world, or certainly the legal ownership of assets from the physical world to the digital world, and do this without intermediaries and using blockchains. And it's super exciting. I mean, it's incredible to see the space emerging. And it's kind of in that weird internet phase, or the 90s internet phase,
yes,
where things are clunky, things seem complicated, there's so much jargon that you don't even know what you're talking about. And you're starting to see that now change, and we want to be part of that change. So that's really what Revix was built for. We want to be able to provide easy access to the cryptocurrency space for long-term investors. If you want to trade, rather go to a trading platform. We're a long-term investment platform, and that's really what we do.
Right. Now, you guys are backed by Sabvest, which is a JSE-listed investment holding company. Are they your principal shareholder?
They are our principal shareholder. We are in talks at the moment with another investor, so we're hoping to be able to raise funding before the end of this year.
Mm-hmm.
Naturally, being a startup and being quite a capital-intensive business, I mean, you have to hire top-quality guys. You are working with people's money. So for us, you know, we're looking to expand into the United Kingdom. So far, South Africa has been our primary market. Revix is a UK and South African-based company. So our next step would be into the UK, and we'd like to find a shareholder that would help us to get there.
Yeah, yeah. Are there any particular complications of expanding a cryptocurrency investment company into other markets? I mean, what does the regulatory landscape look like? Are you a fairly heavily regulated business in South Africa, and what about the UK?
So crypto is in this weird place at the moment where it isn't regulated in South Africa. You aren't yet placed into an investment bucket or a money bucket or like an e-money services bucket. In the UK, fortunately, regulations are moving along slightly faster than South Africa. So we are applying with the FCA to get regulated over there. It's not a full license, if you want to call it that. What they're trying to do, or what the Trump regulators are trying to do, is sort of license the crypto businesses in stages. So they want to start by saying, okay, so if you accept fiat currency like rands or pounds, then we want to make sure that you're not, you know, helping people finance terrorist organizations, yes, or money launder or avoid tax. So they're clamping down, and they're looking for the crypto startups and the crypto businesses such as ourselves to implement AML, anti-money laundering controls, and adhere to strict AML controls. So that's what we've been doing. And come the 10th of January next year, you can't operate as a UK business without receiving an FCA license in the United Kingdom. So that's what we're working towards.
Okay, I presume that you'd actually want to see some regulation in the space because it provides certainty to both yourselves and to your customers.
Almost certainly. I would love to be able to turn to our customers and say, yeah, we've got this license, you know, that helps us going after slightly bigger players, pensions, institutions, brokers, etc. Yeah. And not to mention, you know, dealing with banks as a crypto business is exceptionally difficult.
Yeah.
Banks at any point in time can look at you and say, well, you know, you're not regulated. We don't particularly want to take the risk, and they can close an account. And, you know, that's something that when you are regulated gets kind of mitigated. So yeah, we are working towards that, and we are looking forward to it.
Excellent. Well, Sean, I think a lot of people last year probably wrote off the crypto market. We saw the big Bitcoin crash. When did Bitcoin peak? Was it the end of 2017 or 2018? I can't remember now.
The start of 2018, end of 2017.
End of 2017. So it's been
10th of January 2018 was the market's height. Yeah.
Okay. And I think subsequent to that, a lot of people wrote off Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies more broadly. It went through the, I think the term that Bloomberg News and others used was the crypto winter that followed that end of 2019, beginning of 2020 market crash. But actually, I think that you know, people who don't watch the Bitcoin price or the cryptocurrency market very closely can be forgiven for not realizing perhaps that, that cryptos have actually staged quite a remarkable comeback during the course of 2020. And Bitcoin, I think, it's more than doubled, if not tripled, since the beginning of the year. And it's now flirting with the $12,000 level. Sean, what in your view has driven this resurgence?
There's been a few things. I think the first thing is that Bitcoin in particular, I'm not even talking about the other cryptocurrencies, that it's being compared to gold as a store of value. So you are starting to see a lot of Wall Street veterans. Paul Tudor Jones is probably the most notable name in the space. They've come in and they said, well, we are going to hold 1% to 5% of our portfolio in crypto. And you know, if you're looking for an alternative asset that is uncorrelated to traditional assets, that, you know, is very different in the sense of it can provide an outsized return. And I think this is something that's quite interesting about the crypto space, is you do have this opportunity to earn 2, 3, 4, 5 times your money. And I'm not saying 2, 3, 4, 5 times your money over the short term. I'm saying over the long term. Mm-hmm. But you can only lose the money that you put in. I mean, that's just the maths behind it.
Yeah.
So this is a really volatile asset class. And that upside potential, I think, has drawn a lot of investors into the space. So we actually did a study about a month and a half ago, and we compared our top 10 bundle, which includes the top 10 cryptocurrencies, and we looked at including that in a traditional 60-40 portfolio. Mm-hmm. And we tracked that over the course of just 5 years, so we didn't go back to the early days in crypto. And you saw that just a small 1% to 5% allocation to cryptocurrencies increased your return by an absolute phenomenal amount. I mean, you're talking about increasing your return by over 15 or 20%. And that may sound insane. You know, by allocating a small portion of my portfolio to crypto, how does it increase my overall portfolio's return so much? And it's because if you look at the overall crypto market, you've seen an increase not 100 or 200 or 300%, but over a 5-year period, you're talking thousands of percent. And that's kind of been the emergence of this asset class. And, you know, if this market continues to grow, which we expect it to grow in the near future, then you could still be looking at an outsized return in the near future. And that's ultimately the big opportunity in the space.
Big opportunity, but also big risk.
Of course. I mean, I think that's one thing that everyone has to understand, is that crypto is not a stable, bet your entire life savings on sort of asset. You need to be calculated. You need to not over-allocate to it. You know, with us, you can start with as little as 500 Rand. Mm-hmm. Invest 500 Rand, invest over a year, 2 years, 5 years. You know, that's our approach. If you want to, put a little bit more money into the market, you know, ease into it. Don't rush into it. Put 500, put another 500, put another 500. Or if you've got a bit more money, maybe start smaller and then grow over time. Dollar cost averaging in this market is exceptionally important. And you know, you can't pick the top and you can't pick the bottom. And you have to understand that the crypto market can go up 20% and can go down 20% over a month. And that's just kind of the way that this market moves.
And I suppose once you've got some skin in the game, once you own a bit of Bitcoin or any cryptocurrency for that matter, you suddenly pay a lot more attention to the crypto market and become more interested in it.
Almost certainly. I mean, stacking sats is the term, right? So Satoshis is the smallest unit of Bitcoin.
Yes.
And I think when you buy your first Bitcoin, I remember, it's quite a funny story, but I remember back in about 2013, late 2013, early 2014, when I first started playing around in the crypto space,
yeah.
I remember saying to myself, hey, I've missed this. Like, how have I been so stupid? Bitcoin's trading, at that point in time, it must have been like $80, $90. I'm like, I've missed this. I can't believe it. You know, I knew it was going to go from like $5 to $90 and I missed this. And now I'm looking at this going, you idiot. And I think a lot of people feel very similar. I mean, I personally, I don't want to be like one of the guys that predict prices, and I certainly can't tell you when this will occur, but I do think we will see $1 million Bitcoin.
Yes.
And, you know, that sort of feeling, you know, will I have that same feeling when we hit $1 million? Yes, probably. And I'm sure that there'll be a whole bunch of people right now that are going, oh, I've missed this big game.
Yes.
I think that's the opportunity, because there's 1 million people before this that have felt exactly the same.
Yeah, well, you know, if you bought, as I mentioned at the beginning of our discussion, if you bought Bitcoin at the beginning of this year, you'd be sitting pretty right now. You can made well in excess of a 100% return, which is remarkable. You don't find that in many other investment classes.
Yeah, I mean, this whole year has been quite crazy, I must be honest. I mean, it's fantastic that the crypto market's boomed, and you've seen gold move up, 25-odd% this year? Gold hit a record of $2,076 an ounce. That was the record that was hit this year, which is remarkable.
Yep.
Now you're seeing the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ, they're all hitting all-time highs as well.
Yes.
That, to me, is quite astounding. That's quite a shock. I did not expect that. I think if you had asked me earlier this year, where do you see stock markets, and I'm saying at the beginning of the outbreak, but you know, where do you see stock markets going, I certainly wouldn't have said higher.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot of speculation and more than speculation, I think, about why the American stock market is hitting new levels. It's obviously being driven by the big tech companies, which are all at record levels. We saw Apple's market cap go through $2 trillion just last week, and now I think it's sitting at $2.2 trillion. So it's added $200 billion in market cap in a matter of days. A lot of people I've read suggest that what we're seeing in the U.S. market now is not so much about the fundamentals, but about reserve banks printing money, and that the money sloshing around in the market has to go somewhere, and it's inflationary. It's not flowing through into consumer price indexes, but it is flowing through into inflation and equity prices. What is your take on that argument?
I think there's an important note that needs to be made in what you just said. It's not flowing through to consumer prices just yet.
Just yet.
I think just yet is the important point, because if you look out 5 or 10 years in the future and you have, I don't know what the exact figure is, but it's certainly over $10 trillion that's been printed and injected into the economy. When that money filters through to the everyday consumer, and you've got roughly, give or take a few billion, but the same number of assets or the same value of assets in existence, but a lot more money floating around, I mean, it only makes logical sense that things start to become more expensive on a global level. And you're not talking some small money. You're talking unprecedented monetary policy, unprecedented money printing, like, this is a phenomenal time. And I think that's why as well, this is another reason why you've seen this boom in crypto. Emerging market currencies have been hit. The dollar's starting to be hit. Fiat currencies are being questioned. I think this idea that you can just print your way out of a crisis, you know, and they call it the Fed put, where the Fed will step in to protect and to stop any bankruptcies. I mean, that's kind of destroying and ruining capitalism. I'm certainly not one to say that they should or they shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
But it is making us question this financial system. And I think there's, you know, it's if you had asked me 12 months ago, what is the ideal sort of scenario for crypto to really flourish? Honestly, this is better than anything I could have said to you. Having a global financial crisis, having a lot of currencies get printed beyond belief, and there's no end in sight. That is exactly the use case that I think a lot of crypto heads have been waiting for.
You almost need a boom and bust cycle in capitalism, don't you, to make the system work? Because the recession that inevitably follows a period of good economic times, which we've seen over the last 10 years, it helps clean up inefficiencies in the system. And with all the Fed money sloshing through the system now, one wonders whether those inefficiencies that have been created through the last boom cycle are actually going to be cleaned up.
Yeah, certainly. If you just think about it in a South African context, think about the municipalities that have been borrowing or, you know, not paying their monthly debts. We're not paying for the electricity, we're paying for, you know, the municipal workers and all the rest. Like, if you just kept funding them forever, at some point in time, you know, somebody needs to pay that back.
Yes.
And who's going to pay that back? And I think, you know, that's just a very localized example. But that's essentially what we're doing right now. Companies that are known as zombie companies, companies that aren't really doing all that much, or certainly not producing profits or free cash flow, they should be shut down if they can't do that over the long term. And now that they can issue bonds with near zero interest rates, they're able to kind of avoid that. So you're just seeing a lot of companies being propped up by central banks. And, you know, it's made a lot of people question whether or not this is a financial system that will continue. And I mean, we would never have asked, you know, 12 months ago, 24 months ago, will this financial system be continuing? Mm. And I think, it's brought that to a lot of people's attentions.
Yeah. Now, do you think Bitcoin and other cryptos have been booming this year because of quantitative easing and record low interest rates, and we've got all this money in the system and it's got to go somewhere? Do you think that's perhaps driving up the price of Bitcoin, or do you think that the Bitcoin's price has risen so strongly this year because it's now seen as a digital version of gold?
I think it's a combination of three factors. The first is, yes, it's viewed as now a digital version of gold by some people. Mm-hmm. And I think you're seeing a greater adoption, this is the second reason, by Wall Street. So a lot of institutions are now able to invest in Bitcoin and invest in other cryptocurrencies. There's ETFs, there's funds that are on, well, ETFs on the way, and there's various funds that high net worth individuals can invest in. And then the third area is that you've seen this boom in DeFi, in decentralized finance. Mm-hmm. Now, if this is a term you haven't heard before, I suggest you pay attention, because it is something that is going to be spoken about a lot.
I'm listening carefully.
This is sort of a trend that it started earlier this year, and it has just exploded. It has grown. Like, I can't even tell you. It was $2.1 million. That's the entire DeFi ecosystem. It was $2.1 million back in September 2007. Yep. Today, it's $6.9 billion. I mean, that just shows you how fast this has grown. Since the start of August, it's grown by $2.9 billion. So pretty much 40% of the entire DeFi space's growth has been over, you know, the last five or so weeks. Now, decentralized finance, or as some call it, open finance, is really just peer-to-peer finance. It's where you're using blockchain technology to enable financial transactions without intermediaries. So if you think about it, you know, I could lend you money. You could use that money, and potentially it's not me just lending you money. It could be a group of people that lend you money. And that would be instead of a bank doing so. And you could remove all those costly intermediary fees. Mm-hmm. And that's just on the lending space. If you had to then look at, let's say, the insurance space, I mean, you could do it, have exactly the same concept applied in the insurance space. And you can apply it to all these different financial areas. And all of a sudden, you start questioning, hey, listen, do we actually need these financial intermediaries? Do we need these banks? Do we need these financial institutions to actually perform the tasks that they perform? Or can we go peer-to-peer? And are applications going to emerge that can do this? And you're starting to see that. So in the crypto space, you know, this is all done using smart contract oriented cryptocurrencies.
Yeah.
So that's the likes of Ethereum. It's all the cryptocurrencies in a smart contract bundle. And what a smart contract really is, it's just enforceable code that says, it's pretty much like making money smart, for lack of a better term. Smart contracts enable you to go, okay, so let's, you know, put some conditions into this money. I will only release payment to you if certain things are done. So if you're buying a car from me, say, and, you know, I only want to pay you when that car is actually delivered, then you can force that in the smart contract. You put that smart contract into the money, and essentially when you only get paid when that car is actually delivered. If you look at maybe e-commerce, for you to say, okay, I'm only going to pay this company when I actually receive this delivery, you can just make that a, you know, as part of the contract.
Yeah.
And it's, that's sort of what's driving this DeFi space. And I mean, you can get there's a lot of really weird and creative things happening out there. But that's been a big boom in the crypto space. And you've seen a lot of money head into the likes of Ethereum, Tron, Cardano, EOS, et cetera.
So the best way of taking advantage of this phenomenon is to invest in those specific cryptos.
Yeah, so the smart contract oriented cryptocurrencies, like I just mentioned, Ethereum, EOS, Cardano, yeah, they provide the blockchain infrastructure for these decentralized applications, as they call them, right, to operate on top of. Now, decentralized applications are just like applications that you would have on your phone, except for they need to use a blockchain in order to enforce the contract. Remember, blockchain, or these smart contract oriented blockchains, don't have, you know, companies like we know them today. They've got protocols. They've got rules that say, okay, when something happens, then something else happens. There's no one saying, okay, this has happened or this hasn't happened. This is, you know, generally using verifiable data. So you can right now go bet, you know, like sports betting essentially, on outcomes of events using Augur, which is a cryptocurrency that runs on top of the Ethereum network. Okay. You can, you know, take part in lotteries on top of the Ethereum blockchain as well. And this is just another thing in the DeFi space. Probably the biggest areas that you can borrow and lend. So if you think about it, you've got a bad credit score, you need to borrow money. How else are you going to do that? I mean, you need a payday loan. How are you going to get access to capital? And now there's cryptocurrencies that are built on top of Ethereum and built on top of the EOS blockchains that allow you to do this, where you can borrow money, you can pay interest on it, and it's peer-to-peer. There's no intermediaries involved whatsoever.
Okay. Interesting. So we've touched on the price of Bitcoin and how that's gone up this year, but what about other cryptocurrencies, including some of the ones you've just mentioned now? How have they performed through 2020? Have they done as well? Have there been some standout cryptos that have outperformed Bitcoin?
Oh, yeah. So Bitcoin, it's actually been a really poor performer in the crypto space. So if you look at our crypto bundles, our smart contract bundle and our payment bundle, you know, they're up about 100% more than Bitcoin over this last year.
Wow.
And the reason is that you've got Ethereum, which is up well over 200% this year. You've got Chainlink, which is the fourth biggest cryptocurrency at the moment. That's up over 850% this year. I mean, you say these percentages and you compare them to stocks or anything else, and you're like, wow, like, yes, that's insane. And it is insane. I mean, let's be real. I mean, seeing something up 850% is quite remarkable. Cardano, which is in the smart contract bundle, is up over 290%. And I think it's an important point to make. You've got a lot of these cryptocurrencies that are doing really well. Mm-hmm. And that's phenomenal. But the reason we built our bundles is that you don't really know which cryptocurrencies over the long term are going to be the outperformers.
Yeah.
Are these cryptocurrencies, are the likes of Ethereum, Cardano, Chainlink, going to continue to be the outperformers? Or will others replace them? Because I can assure you, if you went back to early 2017 and you said, listen, there's going to be a cryptocurrency that is going to overtake Bitcoin's market cap, people would have said, no, you're absolutely crazy. Mm. Fast forward 12 months, and you've got Ethereum that increases 12,000% over the course of 1 year and overtakes Bitcoin's prior market cap. Mm-hmm. And that's the sort of thing that you need to pay attention to. So what our bundles do is they automatically rebalance every single month. So if a cryptocurrency increases in value, we include it in the top 10 bundle, we include it in any of our other bundles, and if it declines in value, we remove it from the bundle. So you're always holding the top cryptos in every space.
Right. And is that how ETFs work or unit trusts? What is the equivalent in traditional financial terms?
Yeah, so very similar to an ETF. I think the only difference is that ETFs generally rebalance semi-annually or annually. Mm-hmm. Our crypto bundles rebalance every single month. The crypto market is really dynamic. You can't be rebalancing every quarter, or every 6 months or 12 months. You need to stay up to date with the market. So our rebalancing does exactly that. It keeps you up to date with the market. And what's really neat as well is that with a mutual fund or ETF, you invest in units of the fund. You don't actually own the underlying companies.
Yes.
Now, with our crypto bundles, you own the underlying cryptocurrencies. And this is a technique known as direct indexing. And what's really cool about this, firstly, we're able to get you the best prices. So when you're executing a buy or sell order, we can go to a variety of different exchanges and we can get you the best price at that point in time for Bitcoin, for Ethereum, for EOS, for Cardano, for all these different cryptocurrencies. When you're looking to sell at any point after your purchase, you can, again, get the best prices across these exchanges.
Yeah.
So that's a big benefit. The second big benefit is you don't have any tracking error, because when you invest in ETFs, you'll often see if you download a fact sheet that there is this price graph and then there is this benchmark. And the price graph of the ETF is slightly different to the benchmark. And that tracking error comes down to the fact that at some point in time, that fund didn't hold the exact underlying assets of that benchmark.
Right.
And the difference with our bundles is because you're owning the underlying assets, you perfectly track that benchmark. Mm. So you perfectly will track a portfolio of the top 10 cryptocurrencies rebalanced every single month.
It sounds ideal for an investor who doesn't want to have to be constantly trading in cryptocurrencies to stay up to date on, you know, what might be the best performing ones. You invest some of money in a bundle and you leave it, and the bundle then you guys actively manage that, and hopefully over time the value of that investment increases in line with the movements in a broad range of cryptocurrencies. So you're not having to watch this on a daily basis to ensure that you are maximizing your returns. Am I summarizing?
Yeah. So we don't actively manage it. We've got a rules-based framework. So a few algorithms that we have, they manage everything. We obviously oversee to make sure that those algorithms are working as they should. But yes, that's exactly it. What our goal is of our bundles is really to make investing in crypto effortless and to remove the gambling component. Because I can tell you, I mean, I worked as a professional trader for a while. Generally speaking, the only ones that make money consistently, and I mean, sure, there's a few exceptions to this, but the ones that make a lot of money consistently in the trading space are the professionals. Mm-hmm. They make the money from the amateurs. Mm-hmm. And I think in the crypto space, people, for whatever reason, they really enjoy the thrill, and you know, maybe that's fine for a portion of your portfolio, but to be trading full-time in the space, it is silly. And yes, the only people that really make money are the professionals and then the exchanges. Yes. So our approach is to say, don't treat this as a casino. If you want to gamble, go to Grand West, go to Monte Casino, have fun doing that. But treat this as a real asset class with real upside potential and look out over a 5 or 10 year horizon. Yes. And you know, don't bet your kitchen sink, bet your life savings on this. Sure. Start small, test out the market, be ready for 20% ups and downs. And that's kind of the journey that you get on with crypto. It's a fascinating field to get into and to better understand. And I think you are going to see in the future crypto be a larger part of our life rather than less.
Yeah, and the best way to start to understand is to make an investment, even if it's a small one, because you will spend the time to learn how it works.
Exactly, exactly. And I mean, we send out a weekly mailer as well with the latest updates in the crypto space. So we'll let you know kind of what's gone on, what cryptocurrencies have increased and decreased in price, and obviously all the big developments in the crypto sphere.
Yeah. Now, it's obviously the risk profile of the investor and I suppose their age as well and what they're looking to achieve. But in broad terms, and I should preface this by saying Sean is not going to be giving financial advice here, but what percentage of your portfolio would you typically want to invest in cryptocurrencies?
So I am a relatively aggressive investor. So I would have somewhere between, say, 5 to 7% of my portfolio in cryptocurrencies. I would feel comfortable having that. Mm-hmm. I think somebody that's a little older should be looking at between 2 to 5%. And then somebody that perhaps, you don't have a high risk tolerance, you perhaps don't gamble, like put 1 or 2% into this. Yeah. I mean, the thing is that you've got so much upside opportunity should this market increase in value. And, hopefully if you're putting a few thousand rand in, what's the downside risk really? And as I said before, I mean, our minimum investment amount is 500. Yes. If you want to test the waters with that, go ahead and give it a go. I mean, that to us is sort of our approach. We're long-term greedy, as I call it. We'd like a customer to try out our platform, reach out to our customer support and feel comfortable investing, because over the long term, we got a few other interesting things on the way that are well beyond just the world of crypto. And we'd like to obviously get individuals on board and see that and kind of experience that with us.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I know we touched on this, Sean, in our last podcast, but for those who missed it, we can just briefly cover what it is you do in the gold space with Paxos Gold. We spoke about safe haven assets, gold and cryptocurrencies in the context of all the money printing that's going on and all the disruption that's going on in the world right now. But you actually offer the ability to invest in gold through cryptos. Explain how it works.
Yeah, so Paxos Gold is it's a tokenized gold commodity. And what that means, because people hear tokenized gold commodity and they like get freaked out. So what that means is that there's a gold bar, or there's multiple gold bars that sit in London Brings Vaults. That's the most well-known and the biggest vaults in the world in London. And there's a company in New York called Paxos. And what Paxos has done is they've gone to these, it's a variety of gold bars, and they've tokenized them. So they've said, okay, here's a gold bar. For every single gold bar, there's 400 ounces. Let's create 400 tokens, which equates to 1 ounce per token of Paxos gold or a gold bar. And that's exactly what they've done. So there's a gold token with a serial number on it, and a gold token meaning that there's a digital token that runs on the Ethereum blockchain. You can buy one of these tokens through Revex for as little as 500 grand. One token currently is priced at about 32,000 a grand, which is 1 ounce of gold. And it's really simple. You can invest, as I said, for as little as 500 grand. You can decide to buy or sell whenever suits you. And the big benefit really is in South Africa, you don't particularly want to be owning physical gold. There's insurance costs that come with that. Mm. There's a whole host of other issues. And for us, we take care of all of that for you. You don't pay any insurance, any custody costs. There's only a 1% buy and sell fee when you're buying Paxos Gold with us, and you own physical gold. And the fact that it's not in your possession is, in my opinion, and I think some people will disagree with me, but in my opinion, completely irrelevant. I want to expose you to gold, and I want to know that I actually own a portion of a unit of gold or of a unit of a gold bar, and that was really important. So that's what Paxos Gold is.
Fascinating. So you mentioned the fees, a 1% fee for buying and selling Paxos Gold. What are the other fee structures you've implemented on the Revex platform?
Sure. So that's the only fees for Paxos Gold. For our bundles, we've got an additional 0.17% fee per month, which works out to about a 2.04% per year. Okay. And then there's a very small 50 Rand withdrawal fee when you're wanting to move your funds out of the platform. So there's no subscription fees. There's no sign-up fees. You can get started with us for, as I said, for as little as 500 Rand. And yeah, I mean, unless you're invested in one of our bundles, you won't have any monthly fees.
Okay. All right. And before I let you go, Sean, if you want to sign up, you've been listening to this podcast and you want to buy some Paxos Gold, or you just want to buy the cryptocurrency bundle, what's the process? I presume you go to the Revex website.
Yeah, so you head over to www.revex.com. You sign up for an account. That should take you, we've timed it, about 45 seconds. You'll then get your account verified. You'll need to provide us with a proof of address and an ID document copy. And we can usually do that within an hour or two. And from there, it's as simple as 1, 2, 3. You really just make your first deposit and you choose the investments you want to invest in. That can be one of the bundles, Paxos Gold, Bitcoin, or perhaps you're like, I'm sick and tired of the Rand's depreciation. I want to invest in USDC, which is that dollar-backed stable coin.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's really that easy. You are able to sell out of your investment, all of the investments we offer at any point in time. That could be 2 seconds after making the purchase or in 10 years. That's entirely up to you.
And it's money in out via EFT through banks, is it?
Yes. So we're hoping to introduce credit card pretty soon. Again, that's one of the beauties of regulation. So we are looking forward to getting regulated so we can actually offer a credit card on our platform. But yeah, at the moment it's just EFT.
Great. Well, Sean Sanders is a co-founder and CEO of Revex. Thank you so much for another fascinating discussion.
Fantastic. Thank you, Duncan. Have a good rest of the week.